Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the KE Report Weekend Show, the final show of 2024. It was a choppy week with Christmas right in the middle of the week. Look, the fact of the matter is we had a lot of people taking some time off. I hope all of you listening took some time off, spent some time with your family. That being said, we just didn't have the guests to fill this weekend show. We have a couple daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week. Something released pretty much every day. So go back through our website and podcast to listen to all that updated commentary. What I like to do at the end of the year is replay a show from the very beginning of the year to give us more of a reflection on what people were expecting heading into 2024. We all know how 2024 ended with markets strong, metals, especially gold, very strong, crypto strong, everything ending the year a little bit of a pullback. But again, overall, this was a very good year for markets and for investors. This weekend show is a replay of the very first show from the year. We chat with Dana Lyons and Mike Larson to get more of a generalist overview of what they are looking for this year, 2024. A lot of their predictions were actually quite spot on. But again, it was a good year for many different markets. So I hope you all enjoy this weekend show, the first segment being with Mike Larson. Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report, the first weekend edition of 2024. And on this weekend show, we are going to be focusing very much on generalist commentary. We're going to jump around from the broad averages to the commodities, even into energy, and talk about some of the seasonal factors as more generalists share their outlook. So we're getting more of a balanced perspective here. Again, please be sure to visit our website and podcast for all of our daily editorials and especially the company updates, as those will be a bit more focused on individual sectors and stocks. To kick off this show, we are chatting with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at The Money Show. Now, Mike, look, we're recording this about halfway through the day on Wednesday, so we only have a couple days of trading to really assess how 2024 is beginning. And look, so far we've seen, I guess, a short-term reversal here where the dollar has started off the year strong. Yields even have moved generally higher, and that move started kind of in the last week, that shortened trading week in December. And markets have weakened a little bit here along with some of the metals. So overall, Mike, what's your takeaway from the start of the year? And can we make anything out of, again, how the year starts, especially when it's a bit of a shift change?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there is a whole talk of a January indicator. As goes January, so goes the year. But, you know, I don't think there's ever been anything officially proved that as goes the first 36 hours of January, so goes the year, right? You know, I think we've definitely seen, again, just a little bit of reversal here where, you know, the dollar pops, gold goes down, stocks give up some of their gains with tech being particularly weak and so on. That's been the case in the first day and a half of trading, a couple days of trading in the new year. But I think more broadly speaking, it's probably just some unwinding of the momentum that we had across the board, people repositioning in a new year a bit and so on and so forth. But I don't think it's more concerning than that, unless this is going to be something that were to continue throughout the rest of the month and then maybe into February as well. So nothing that I'm too concerned about here. When I look at kind of the overall, you know, my overall stance in the markets and sort of the overall take, I tried to sum it up at a recent Money Show event we did back in December as be bold, don't fold, ignore what's old, and buy gold. But generally speaking, that means staying long stocks, long energy and metals. Don't fold, meaning you don't want to kind of get sucked in by some of the negative chatter on market breadth and credit conditions and so on. You sort of want to ignore the themes that are old, which is rising inflation, rising dollar, Fed hikes, and so on. And you want to buy gold, which is self-explanatory, but also in the broader sense, you know, buy things that tend to do well in a market environment where the dollar is weaker. So that's kind of how I've framed my investment approach heading into this new year. And I think it's going to be ultimately the kind of thing that we see play out over the quarters ahead. Just a lot of the things that were driving markets in 2023, especially through October, began to fade as we got into the tail end of the year. I think some of the new trends that we're talking about here, again, weaker dollar, Fed cuts, credit environment being pretty solid, you know, things like precious metals dabbling or breaking out to new highs. That's the kind of stuff that I think is going to last and is going to be, you know, more than just a flash in the pan like we saw late in 2023. And I wouldn't be too concerned about what's happened here in the very beginning of 2024.
Well, Mike, I like that mantra. And when you think to most years, no 2 years are the same, obviously, but there are things where you'll see a changing of the guard. And what was the old theme, as you mentioned, worrying about rates and the Fed and inflation, has kind of become passe. Now what we're looking at, and the other thing is, in the general markets, everybody last year was pegging the growth in the indexes on the Magnificent Seven. But at the end of last year, in the fourth quarter, we actually saw the market breadth improve. That was a new narrative. Like, we saw the Russell 2000 come screaming back. We saw a lot of sectors that were the most beat up bounce back in a big way. And overall, the participation seemed like it came out of the Magnificent Seven and into other market sectors. So is that a theme you think will continue into this year as kind of a new theme?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm glad you pointed it out because that is noteworthy. It was different. It was something that post the October low really stood out to me. And I think, to be honest, that's what we kind of needed to see for me to stay positive. I mean, you know, it's great to have the same seven names for us all to talk about. I don't think that Magnificent Seven, you know, anything's materially changed there. These companies are doing the right thing strategically. They are doing the right things in a business sense, by and large. They do have great earnings potential and so on. But you can't just have a market that's driven by those names to ultimately, in the long, long term, be healthy. So what happened there, to me, is one of the reasons why, if anything, I was even more bullish coming out of that October low than I was, you know, earlier in the year. And why, and it's one of the main reasons why I think I, you know, am pretty positive on this year coming ahead. I wouldn't be surprised to see a market where the Mag 7 names underperform and you see small caps, you see global stocks, you see some of these contra dollar type sectors and these underinvested sectors, whether it's financials as another member of that, that do better and, you know, on a both a relative basis and maybe even on an absolute basis over time. I mean, you know, it's worth noting J.P. Morgan, for example, just hit an all-time high on the same day everybody was nervous and worried that Apple gave back a couple percentage points and some of the other AI stocks got whacked. So I think you're going to see, as that sort of recession narrative fades and as the Fed is able to ease back on interest rates because of the inflation continuing to come down, and as the dollar does likely weaken, and as some of the worst credit market scenarios begin to fade into the backdrop, I think that's a market environment that is, you know, is one where breadth improves, where you look for opportunities in some new names, new sectors, new parts of the market that ultimately didn't do much for you last year and now, you know, are likely to do more for you as an investor this year. So great point. And I think it's noteworthy. And I think it's one of the reasons why, again, I'm, you know, probably pretty constructive heading into 2024.
Okay, so bullish, I guess, into 2024 in a wider range of stocks. Does that mean we are going to see all-time highs, or for the Dow, continue to see all-time highs as that broad average moved in Q4 and kept on running higher? So 2024, is it going to be a year of all-time highs for the broad averages?
Yeah, I think it's going to be. I think it will. I think it is. You know, it's funny that, you know, historically or more recently, last few years, nobody really does talk about the Dow, right? But here it is. That's the sort of old stodgy index is the one that manages to hit new highs, whereas the S&P almost did before rolling over a little bit. And the NASDAQ certainly had a great year, but still needs a little more to go to get to those all-time highs. That, I think, is going to be, you know, I think that is somewhat noteworthy, and it's going to be kind of the story as the year unfolds. So, again, I don't think you're going to see these Mag 7 type names crash or fall apart or anything, but I think you're going to see market environment where they tend to tread more water and those other sectors are the ones that pick up the slack. So as long as you get stronger performance in the other 493 names in the S&P, you know, even if you have weakness in the seven sort of top heavy big mega cap names, you can still have a decent year. I mean, I don't think it's going to be this fantastic gangbusters, you know, up 40% kind of crazy year or anything like that. But I think a solid, maybe high single digit, low double digit type year is a pretty reasonable expectation. And I'd also add that, again, within that, if you look at some of those sectors that were beaten up and underperforming, you can get some pretty solid, you know, decent, much stronger numbers out of those, simply because the market's underinvested in them and they've been lagging and they have been sort of like, you know, left behind. So that's where the money, I think, is going to rotate into. And I think that is likely what we're already starting to see early in this year. And if in that rotation story is likely to continue as the year plays out.
Well, Mike, let's talk about two of the biggest market governors, and that is interest rates and the dollar. Those are tied to Fed policy. They're tied to financial outlooks. They're tied to whether we're going to get the recession or not. That's the most broadcast recession of all time that still hasn't arrived yet. And when we saw the action coming out of those October lows last year, it was tied to the Fed and other central banks around the world signaling they were basically done with the tightening cycle and were in a pause mode. And that gave almost all markets across the board a lift, whether it was the general markets, the cryptos, the commodities. Every market seemed to get a lift except the dollar and interest rates. They trended down. Do you expect to see that same weakness in the dollar and interest rates this year, and especially what would happen if the Fed was to actually cut rates as many are anticipating?
Sure. I think what we've seen in the first couple of days of 2024 is just a little taking off the froth, a little bit of, you know, tempering some of the most aggressive rate cut expectations, most aggressive pivot expectations, if you will, for the Fed. So I think that's a little bit of what's behind this developments we've seen in the last few days. But longer term, do I think the Fed has a lot of room to reverse its policies? Do I think that reduction in inflation and some of these other developments we're seeing are going to lead to an easier Fed? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we can quibble over whether it's going to be three cuts in 6 months or four cuts in 8 months or blah, blah, blah. I mean, Wall Street will do what Wall Street does and worry about the nitty gritty. But from a broader investment standpoint, the takeaway is, look, it's going to be an easier policy environment. What happens in an easier policy environment? Again, the dollar underperforms, things like gold outperform. And I think that you can generally be more aggressive as an investor. Again, you can be more bold if you don't have to fight the Fed every day and come in and worry about Powell or somebody else giving some super bearish, super tight speech and blowing the market up. So I don't think it's going to be a market that gets back to some of the shenanigans and stupid stuff we saw going on with SPACs and this, that, and the other a couple of years ago. I don't think it's going to be that kind of environment, but I do think it's going to be a market environment where money is, on the whole, going to be somewhat easier, and that you as an investor should position yourself to profit or tilt towards that kind of environment and, you know, maximize your potential in it.
All right, let's get into some of the commodities and metals, starting off with gold. You've mentioned it a couple of times, and early in December, gold ran up kind of early in the morning or late at night on a Friday or a Sunday night, Monday morning, up to all-time highs, and it made another run towards 2100 late in December. It's still above 2000 right now, the argument being the gold stocks still have a lot of catching up to do. So, Mike, all-time high for gold, and do gold stocks finally play some catch-up this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at the underlying metal, I mean, from a technical and a fundamental standpoint, I think there's a lot of there's a very easy bullish case to make and a very convincing bullish case to make. So same thing here. We're sort of dinking and dunking around these levels. Are we going to set a new high? Is it going to be a weekly or monthly high, or is it just going to test and then pull back? I mean, you know, that matters for the short term if you're a quick in and out type trader. But from a longer term perspective, I don't see any reason to be bearish on the metal. And I don't see any reason to not expect all time highs. I mean, one of our technicians that was at that event, you know, very respected technician, was talking about, you know, a target in the sort of 2600 level, 2600 level for gold, you know, just based on the broad base that it's had over the last couple of years. So yeah, I think that a bullish stance for the underlying metal makes sense. For the, you know, for the equities, again, I think some of it is just that the big money needs to be convinced that this is more of a than a flash in the pan. And once that happens, that's when you're going to see the big boys sort of move into that sector. So if we do get that convincing move, and we do see some, you know, top 2100 start running towards 2200, you're going to see a lot of money move into a sector that hasn't seen a lot of money move into that sector for quite some time. So sometimes it feels like waiting for Godot, but I think that honestly, even for the underlying miners, the environment's pretty constructive. The macro view is pretty constructive. So I would, you know, I would continue to lead bullishly there.
Well, Mike, what about in the base metal sector, especially, let's just go with the doctor of the whole sector, copper. What do you look into the base metals prognostication for 2024, considering that there still are calls for an economic contraction, but there's a larger group expecting the economy to keep rebounding. How are you looking at base metals?
Sure. I mean, again, I think the issue with base metals to some degree and copper and so on is there's so much tied to what happens in China, right? I mean, that's been the big driver. It was the big driver to the upside. It's been sort of the thing that's weighed on it. I mean, all the you know, demand and the situation of real estate in China and construction and some of these emerging markets pulling back and what that means. So it's a little hard to, you know, it's a little hard to say, okay, well, if U.S. economic prospects get better for this year, and if we do finally agree that the recession that never came is not going to come, you know, that would arguably be bullish for copper and some of the other base metals. But some of it just really depends on what's going on in China. And until they're not going back to sort of that era of hyper stimulus, all the, you know, ridiculous amounts of money they threw at the market coming out of the great financial crisis. So it's going to be a little bit more water treading going on there, I think, especially in metals that are tied more to what's going on in China. So, you know, I like the story for base metals as recession fears fade. I just don't think it's quite as compelling as precious, simply because you're not going to have that dollar kicker. It's going to be a little bit less of a thing. And you are going to have that issue of just, you know, China overhang, China construction, China loans defaulting, you know, real estate construction not getting back to the levels it was a few years ago anytime soon and so on. So that's my concern there.
One other sector that I quickly want to get your comments on is Bitcoin, because Bitcoin got off to kind of a crazy start to the year, going up over 45,000, but then has pulled back more in this range of between 40 to, I guess, 45,000. Last year was a strong year for Bitcoin after 2022. That was a very bad year for Bitcoin. What's your outlook?
Sure. I think, you know, I'm not a crypto specialist. Like, that's not, you know, my main area of focus. So with that caveat out of the way, I do clearly follow it. And I listen to what some of our money show experts who are crypto experts have to say. And I will say some of the speakers we've had and some of the experts on things like ETFs and, you know, all that's the process that's been going on with the SEC and how Bitcoin ETFs are likely to be approved and so on and so forth. You know, those are catalysts for getting more institutional money, advisor money, generalist money, so to speak, into crypto when you can make it a sort of mass market type asset where you have less hurdles to say, I want to buy $20 worth of, you know, fractional Bitcoin. I mean, when you have to go through three different steps to do it, that's one thing. When you can just buy an ETF and do it by proxy and not have the performance issues that you have with futures ETFs in that sector, then it's going to attract money. So I think that the big broad bull case there, you know, is probably solid. I would caution that clearly you're going to see a lot of volatility here because there's going to be people that bought over the last several quarters anticipating the SEC approving these ETFs. And then there's going to be people that say, ah, now's the time, it's the top, I'm going to sell because they've been approved. And you're going to, you know, then you're going to see the people that step in and say, oh, now they're approved, I want to get in. So there's going to be a lot of fluctuations. I think that should be expected. But longer term, I look at sort of what happened in crypto and Bitcoin the last couple of years as like the dot-com boom and bust or the housing boom and bust. You had an enormous boom slash bubble of all of these people getting in, did a bunch of ne'er-do-wells and shysters and shady things going on. The market crashed. But ultimately, there is some kind of use case, investment case, you know, way that crypto is going to be integrated into the financial system and so on. So now you're in that process of, you know, the enormous run-up is over, the enormous crash is over. Now we're going to see who's left, who survives, and what you can do to start getting involved for the long term. So ultimately, I think, again, it's just like with housing circa 2011, 12, once you came out of that bust, there were, you know, places, it made sense to buy houses again. It made sense to start dabbling in that sector again. Just like in 2003, once the dot-com bust was ending, you know, there were some tech companies that survived. And, you know, that's why Amazon went from a 99 cents to whatever the heck it's at today. So I think that, you know, it's a similar situation playing out there. So while I'm not a huge crypto specialist, I think just from sort of a big picture cycle approach, there's value to be had. And there's, you know, it's something that I think more mainstream investors want to keep an eye on now, because a lot of the dead wood and the bad actors have been liquidated.
Well, Mike, one other sector that has garnered a lot of attention the last 2 years is the energy sector. 2022 was a breakout in the sector, and a lot of those stocks ripped higher in the energy, oil, and gas stocks. But then 2023 was a tale of the reverse of that. A lot of the oil and gas stocks pulled back in a big way. The actual commodities pulled back in a big way. Now it looks like a sector trying to find equilibrium. How are you looking at energy going into 2024?
Again, you know, energy was the strong player in 2022, the dramatic outperformer. It was, you know, weaker and underperforming to some degree in late 2023. I think, you know, there are concerns about whether production cuts are going to be able to be held in place. Some of the worst fears of and crisis-driven buying in the Middle East haven't manifested, which is great for the world. It's not great if you're long energy. So, you know, you've seen some pullback there as some of the money that was rotating into oil and other energy investments and sort of geopolitical fears comes out. But ultimately, I think that, you know, again, and some of it's tied to China, let's be honest. I mean, it's the same kind of thing that weighs on other base commodities and economically sensitive commodities. It's, well, what's going to happen in China? The U.S. can be a big player from an economic growth standpoint, but if China is continuing to sort of stagnate, then that's not going to be good for a lot of these base metals and base commodities like oil that are tied to China's economic growth. So I think some of it's related to that. I think that the case is solid to still be long. I don't think this is a sector that's going to fall apart again. But again, I think if somebody said, do you want to buy an energy stock or do you want to buy a financial or a small cap or some of these other industrials and so on that underperformed, I guess I'd have to tilt towards the latter. I don't think energy is going to perform poorly. I still like the sector, but I think there are some things that have been beaten down that are probably going to perform even better. And again, it's some of those things like financials and small caps and so on.
So since we're on that energy front, what about the whole green transition tied in with critical minerals? That runs to, in a way, kind of its own catalyst due to some of the interest and some of the government comments that we've heard over the last 3-4 years now. Mike, what's your thoughts? What's your outlook on this green transition and key catalyst for critical minerals, the wide range of them this year?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not going to go away, but I think we did get to a point where the relative cost of EVs versus gas-powered vehicles and just, you know, the cost of repair and the cost of insurance for them and so on. You know, you've seen that, like, demand has been solid, but it's kind of coming off the boil a little bit here. You've gotten all the early adapters and so on. You've gotten all the people that have taken advantage of government incentives. And now you've seen some inventories build up. You've seen demand cool a little bit. But ultimately, not just from a government standpoint, but from sort of a, you know, long-term big picture standpoint, the world is going to transition to that. It is going to be a process that doesn't go away. So I think that, you know, the long-term investing case for commodities that are involved with that, for companies that are involved with that transition is still solid. But again, you've seen, you know, at the same time, you've seen in the shorter term, some concerns that maybe, you know, the push was a little too aggressive. Maybe the assumptions about adaptation and transition were a little bit over-optimistic. So we're seeing things cool on that front and on that score. And that probably stays with us through this year. But yeah, I mean, over time, is internal combustion going to fade over time? Are we going to move to that EV model on both a commercial and personal vehicle approach? Yeah, we will. It's just going to be a thing that I think people need to appreciate. It's going to take a long time, and fossil fuels and companies that produce them and refine them and so on are going to be involved in the energy business for a long time to come. They're not going the way of the horse and buggy manufacturers in a few years.
All right, Mike, we're going to wrap it up here. A lot to take in because we jumped to a lot of different sectors and got your 2024 outlook. Look, it does sound like this year should continue on from last year in terms of some better environments for investors in a wide range of sectors. Maybe not as good as last year because we did see some pretty big gains in some of the bigger stocks and then that broadening out at the end of the year. But hey, as long as we can avoid any major disruptions to these markets, hey, maybe we are just in this consistent uptrend that benefits a lot of investors. So, Mike, always great chatting with you. If anyone wants to keep up to date on Mike and what's going on with the Money Show conferences, check out the link that I will post within that weekend show posting. Mike, thanks for your time. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you, Corey. Take care.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.